Maybe you're one of those people who froze up as a kid when you saw a bee buzzing around. Our attitudes have changed just a bit over the years. Bees are not as fearsome as they once were perceived. Remember the warnings of killer bees? And they seem to be held in quite a bit of esteem at the moment, which is a good thing for them because bees appear to need plenty of help. Bee populations have been challenged in recent years. Our next guest knows a lot about bees and works to help build their numbers. Dr. Lynn Royce is an entomologist, and she'll be speaking at the Oregon Honey Festival on Saturday in Ashland. Dr. Royce, thanks for joining us today.
You're welcome.
Do you have a sense of the state of bees and how well bees are doing generally?
Well, there are a lot of surveys across the United States, and you get various results. So we're still losing a lot of colonies, especially commercial beekeepers who do a lot of the pollination around the country. So, yeah, there's still a problem out there.
So CCD, colony collapse disorder, is that still a thing?
Well, CCD is not a single entity. Mm-hmm. It's kind of an umbrella thing that colonies begin to just disappear due to many factors, disease, pests, things like that. So, and a big thing for our bees these days is loss of habitat, and you wouldn't think that would be too important for bees going out and pollinating crops, but they need a diversity, and so as roadside flowers disappear and forests become more industrial, you know, more single tree, then flowers disappear that the bees need, and that's hard on them too. Be like us having to just eat beefsteak all the time.
Right. Is it so much about where they live as what lives around them?
It's both. You know, migratory bees go lots of places all summer long. Hmm. So, yeah, but what's around them is also really important.
Now, I understand you've studied the trachea mites that have been a major contributor to bee declines. Can you kind of walk us into to what the general findings are there and what the problem is?
Well, trachea mites were seen as a really serious threat when they first showed up in the early 80s, and the bees seem to have adjusted to them, and they're not nearly as serious a problem now as the varroa mite, which is a larger mite that feeds on the developing pupa and causes all kinds of damage. But their biggest problem is the varroa mites also transmit viruses to the bees that are quite virulent.
Hmm. Okay, so it sounds like bees are getting hit by a bunch of different things from a bunch of different sides at the same time.
At the same time, yeah. And I think that not only are bees endangered, but our commercial beekeeping enterprises have much more difficult time now than they have ever had. So it's difficult for... It's kind of scary for our food supply.
No doubt. I mean, and what's the figure? Something like 80% of our food supply depends upon pollination from bees?
I think they call it a third, but I suspect it's more than a third. You know, that's directly crops that require pollination. Mm-hmm. So all our fruits and vegetables, well, not all of them, but many of our fruits and vegetables require pollination to produce the product.
So let's talk about a bit of your history with bees. I read one of your blog entries about an event in college when you had to pretend, in a sense, to be the queen bee. Tell us about that particular episode.
Run that by me again.
You had a pheromone disc or something on a balloon.
Oh,
blog entry about that.
Oh, this is how bees mate. So queens do not mate anywhere near their hive. They fly somewhere between 5 and 15 kilometers away from the colony.
Huh.
And that ensures a better chance of crossbreeding.
Uh-huh.
So she's not breeding with any of her relatives.
Okay.
And without getting into a lot of bee biology, if she does that, she will have a better colony, and she needs to mate with a number of drones, at least up to 20.
Mm-hmm.
So she will go out on two flights in her life to mate, and then she comes back to the colony, and the worker bees take care of her, and she begins to lay eggs, and she will lay eggs for up to 5 years. But as she gets older, she isn't able to lay as many eggs, and they will eventually replace her. So she flies away from the colony, and she goes through areas called drone congregation areas.
Uh-huh. Drone hangouts?
Drone hangouts. And drones from colonies all around the area will hang out in these areas, and they use them year after year. And this is always an amazing thing to me, because drones don't live through the winter. Only the worker bees live through the winter as mm-hmm. queen. So all the drones, all this year's drones will die sometime in probably October. Maybe they'll live into November if the colony's doing really well. But by the end of November, they're all gone. So the new drones, the next year, will use the same congregation area, and it's a mystery to us how they find it, because there's nobody to show them.
Huh, it's like showing up at the same bar, but there was nobody to show you that this is the bar that they go to.
Right, mm-hmm. Yeah. And so she flies through that area, and the drones go after her, but if she flies out of the area, they don't follow her out of this area. And for a human to walk into a drone congregation area, if we didn't have queen pheromone on a balloon up in the air, we wouldn't know we had crossed that line. And when we walk out of it, say we walk across this area and we walk out of it, there's nothing to say, okay, we've walked out of the drone congregation area. It's just not real clear how they delineate these areas, the drones.
So you walked out with this balloon carrying a pheromone disc, and what happened with the drones? What'd they do?
They weren't there anymore. So I took a few steps and looked up, and the queen pheromone disc was just dangling there, and there were no drones. So I turned around and walked 5 steps maybe back into the drone congregation area, and the comet behind the queen formed immediately.
Wow. So a real drone zone, in a sense, you had stepped into.
Yeah, and we just don't know all the cues that they use, because they mate at about 15 feet, somewhere in that range.
Mm-hmm.
So they're quite high up, and they're not very big, so it's hard to hard to see what's going on exactly. And you'll get up to 300 drones following a queen, and we call it a comet.
Huh, that's interesting. Dr. Lynn Royce is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, an entomologist with extensive knowledge of bees and obviously some time spent impersonating queen bees. You can join us on the Jefferson Exchange prior to her appearance at the Oregon Honey Festival on Saturday in Ashland. 800-838-3760 for questions or stories about bee behavior. 800-838-3760 or by email jx@jeffnet.org. So, Lynn, is it gratifying to you to be able to see people begin to truly embrace bees rather than just run from them all the time?
Oh, yes. And I think it's really good. But there's still, you know, a great majority of the population don't really understand bees or know what the problem is. So there's a lot of work yet to be done to inform people how important they are.
Now, I noticed you're a board member of an outfit called Treehive Bees, which is looks like you're doing some really interesting work. Tell us about it.
When we took bees, literally, out of the trees and put them in the movable frame hives that we have now, we changed all the parameters that bees had evolved with over the years. So we took them from being kind of randomly distributed throughout the forest and put them in clumps of colonies, because that was easier for humans to work with instead of having them all scattered out. And then when we did this, we put them out of trees. I think the average on the East Coast is a height of about 29 feet, and we put them right on the ground. So we introduced some predators to them, like raccoons, skunk, yellow jackets, things that hunt on the ground for goodies, and a honeybee colony is a great goodie. It's full of young larvae and bees and honey. So a lot of things really appreciated are taking the bees out of trees and putting them on the ground so they could eat. Anyway, so Treehive Bees just wants to go back to the tree hollow and look at things that we might be able to help bees that are now having a hard time because there isn't enough forage and maybe some of the other things we changed could be given back to them, like slightly thicker walls and having more hobbyist beekeepers so that their colonies are more spread out may help the bees a lot, things like that.
So are the colonies that we create for them when we build these essentially bee apartment houses, are those larger than the colonies they would normally live in nature if they were just living in tree hollows and that sort of thing?
I believe so, but I would like to look at different trees. I think maples and oaks may provide a slightly larger hollow than some of the trees like Doug fir. So I think we need to look at a lot of different trees and just see what's going on there that we haven't given much thought to, because we're working with this nice unit where we can take frames out and examine them and put them back, and we can take honey from them easily and not disturb them too much, and you know.
So is this sort of a hybrid between where they naturally live and where they've been, I guess, allowed or coached to live? I mean, you're essentially taking the colonies and strapping them to trees. Is that what you're doing?
That's kind of an in-between. I'd like to go out in our forest and find some of the feral colonies that are in our forests here just to see how different from the East Coast the West Coast is.
Mm-hmm.
So we certainly have different trees, so the offerings to bees is going to be a little bit different here. And then I hang colonies in trees. That's kind of an interface between the feral colony in a tree hollow and the bees that are kept on the ground. And it allows me to change things and see what's going on a lot easier than if I had to somehow access a tree hollow.
Lynn, how different is the behavior between the feral bees and the ones that are used by agriculture?
You know, I think the behaviors are fairly similar. The bees have certain needs, and you have to meet those or you couldn't keep them alive, certainly. But there are things that happen on the ground. So when we keep bees in a group, like there may be up to 60 or 100 colonies in a small area, something happens. Bees get lost when they're coming home and they see all these hives that are exactly the same color. Position might be a little different, but mostly they can't always find home, and so they get lost and go into the wrong colony. And as long as they have a load of pollen or nectar, they will be accepted by the new colony. But they can also bring in diseases and transmit parasites and pests when they do this. And so when we were studying tracheal mites, we would put an infested colony into a yard that we knew didn't have tracheal mites, and within a few months, all the colonies had tracheal mites.
Okay, so the pathogens do move pretty fast through the populations.
So the pathogens can be moved pretty fast when we change that setup of randomly distributed to clumped distribution, yeah. And there are other things, but that's an example of what happens when we put them on the ground.
There are pictures on the Tree Hive Bees website of bee rescues. What are the circumstances in which you rescue bees?
Those particular bees were rescued from a logging outfit who knew a beekeeper, and they would always call him when they had inadvertently cut down a bee tree, because most people aren't prepared and don't have the equipment to deal with that, so they would just kill the bees.
Okay.
So that they didn't have to deal with them. And because they knew a beekeeper, they would call him, and he'd go out and they'd show him where the log had been put. But it's very hard on the bees. I mean, you can imagine if you lived in an apartment building and it was chopped down and fell over, clunk.
Right.
That would be bad enough, but then everything has changed. So bees angle their cells, and I'm sure you've seen pictures of comb in a beehive.
Sure.
So there's all these little cells pushed together so that they become hexagons. And they angle them up because nectar is about the consistency of water. So if they were flat, the nectar would just run out.
Mm-hmm.
So they're angled up a little bit. When the tree drops to the ground, obviously that changes everything. They may have fallen downhill so that all the angles don't work anymore.
Oh, okay. That makes sense. We have a call here from Don in Roseburg. I want to get in before we go. Welcome, Don. We're talking to Dr. Lynn Royce, the entomologist.
Yes, tell us about swarms. I have a beekeeping friend who caught 40 swarms this year, which is unusual, and he turns those into hives. And what causes a swarming, and should you be afraid of a swarm?
All right, good questions. Thanks, Don.
You should never be afraid of a swarm. And, yes, I have been stung by a swarm when I'm trying to hive it up. But for the most part, bees in a swarm don't have a home to defend, so they're pretty calm. And I don't recommend you go up and pet the bees in a swarm, but you probably could without getting stung, but I wouldn't guarantee that. Still, they're not very aggressive when they're in a swarm, usually.
Okay. Well, so for the folks who are still thinking, you know, I really want to help out pollinators, I want to help out bees, what's the simplest thing that people can do to try to develop habitat or other things that bees can find usable?
They can encourage no roadside spraying and just planting of things that the bees, there are all kinds of lists out there now. And I think Thurzi's Society in Portland has a lot of good lists, but I think you can find lists everywhere on flowers, flower outlets,
okay.
Nurseries sell packages.
Yeah, we talked to Xerxes just yesterday, but it was about butterflies. So, so lots of flying things to talk about. Lynn Royce's presentation at the Oregon Honey Festival will be about hive environment and honeybee health. That'll be on 3:30 on Saturday at the Elks Lodge in Ashland as part of the overall Oregon Honey Festival. Admission charges required. Dr. Lynn Royce, thanks for joining us today on the Jefferson Exchange.
Thank you very much for having me.
All right, take care.